Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Daniel Ziblatt, who's a professor of government at Harvard University, who studies Europe from the 19th century to the present.
Yes, sir. It's your boy, Big Vern. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. You heard?
Greetings. My name is Tenali Rennick, and I invite you to tune in to Muddy Boots on the fourth Thursday of the month from 1 to 3 a.m., and we shall wander where sneakers never will. Weaving within the playlist are artisanal tunes, film clips, one-off sounds, folk tales, cut-ups, literary snippets, poetic whimsy, and other assorted oddities. That's the fourth Thursday of the month from 1 to 3 a.m. See you there.
Desmarchand, a proud supporter of WGXC, is a men's and women's boutique featuring creative and classic clothing, shoes, and accessories. Now presenting our fall collections from European and American designers. Desmarchand.com. Desmarchind.com. On Warren Street in Hudson, New York.
Tune in to All Together Now, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m. featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Tune in to learn more about the issues that affect communities throughout the Capital Region and the Hudson Valley, from the Catskills to the Berkshires.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, June the 26, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Harley Davidson hitting the road with some motorcycle production over Trump tariffs. Also on the Tuesday rundown, navigating digital solutions in the age of big tech. And BLM open houses on changes to the sage-grouse plant. Now our top story, production of Harley-Davidson motorcycles sold in Europe will move from U.S. factories to facilities overseas. Yahoo News reports that's as a consequence of the retaliatory tariffs the EU is imposing on American exports and the escalating trade war with the Trump administration. Yahoo notes that Trump tweeted Monday he's surprised that Harley-Davidson was first to wave the white flag in the tariff dispute. A Harley-Davidson spokesman said the company had nothing to say in response to Trump's tweet beyond its filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Meantime, a top White House trade official downplayed reports that the Trump administration was making plans to block Chinese investments in American tech companies on Monday. USA Today says confusion over the administration's China trade policy related to tech caused a sell-off that pushed the Dow down nearly 500 points before it recovered and finished down 1.3%. Stories of kids being forcibly separated from parents adding fuel to the fire for advocacy groups in Ohio already fighting for the rights of immigrants. Mary Sherman has our report.
After widespread outrage over separations along the southern U.S. border, GOP leaders vowed to end the practice, and last week President Donald Trump signed an executive order to end separations. The Intercommunity Justice and Peace Center in Cincinnati is among the organizations in Ohio working to help elevate the voices of immigrant communities, and program manager Samantha Searles says the solution is not that easy, since there are policies that separate families here in Ohio.
A lot of people may not realize that family separation has been happening for months, if not years now, through ICE activity, and it's recently been increasing. So regardless of what's happening on the border, there are still families being separated by our immigration system.
IJPC is hosting an event tonight to discuss current policies and educate community members on how they can advocate for immigrants.
And as the Federal Trade Commission seeks ideas on how to better police big tech, Roz Brown reports a newly launched nonprofit is helping existing small business access digital tools.
The FTC will hold from 15 to 20 meetings between September and January to assess the need for new laws aimed at consumer privacy and marketplace competition. Jake Ward is president of Connected Commerce Council, or 3C. He says regulations aimed at big tech could have the unintended consequence of hurting small businesses that rely on digital tools and services to grow and succeed. He believes the proper digital tools, resources, and training can improve efficiency for a small business and increase their potential for success.
The benefit of these platforms, these tools, and these technologies to today's small businesses is remarkable. They grow faster, they run more efficiently, they make more money, they last longer.
In 2018, a study by Deloitte Professional Services found that small businesses with high levels of digital engagement earn twice as much revenue per employee.
Wise says that small businesses are helping drive the world's economy more than ever. Digital tools such as web building software, social media, and data analytics help them remain competitive on the world stage. Concerns being raised about cuts to the programs in the latest version of the Farm Bill that could undermine farmers' progress on sustainable agriculture. The controversial bill passed by only two votes in the U.S. House last week, with all Democrats opposed. It would eliminate the Conservation Stewardship Program, or CSP, and cut conservation funding by $5 billion. Anna Johnson is with the Iowa-based Center for Rural Affairs. She says the CSP has been part of the Farm Bill since 2002.
It allows farmers and ranchers to continue to be producing on their land while also instituting the conservation practices that are most helpful and most relevant for their operations.
The American Farm Bureau sees the bill as a big win for farmers because it makes improvements to risk management and crop insurance programs. The Senate expected to take up its version of the bill this week, and the two will be combined for a vote ahead of a September 30th deadline. And finally, Eric Gladys tells us the Bureau of Land Management holds open house meetings in Colorado this week on proposed changes to the Greater Sage-Grouse Management Plan.
The plan was created by a host of stakeholders over several years to keep the bird off the endangered species list after its populations have declined by as much as 95% from historic levels. Suzanne O'Neill with the Colorado Wildlife Federation thinks the agency's proposal to allow oil and gas production inside the bird's most sensitive habitat areas would be a big step backwards.
Now that BLM proposes to amend the plan, Coloradans really need to ensure that the changes do not imperil the health of the greater sage-grouse and also the many other species that depend upon healthy sagebrush habitat.
New maps suggest the Trump administration is making good on its promise to prioritize fossil fuel development.
Today's open house kicks off at 5 at the BLM field office in Silt. If you are in Colorado, they'll also be meeting on Wednesday at the Moffett County Fairgrounds. Public comments on the proposed changes are being accepted through August the 2nd. I'm Mike Clifford, and you've been newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 73 and a low around 54. Wednesday, there's a 30% chance of showers, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 70, a low around 62. Thursday, there's a 80% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm with a high near 75 and a low around 63. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
Tell us how you really feel.
You can tell us how you really feel. Fun fact, you could do that by calling a number. It's an easy number to call, 518-697-7400.
You can do that by sending us money.
You can tell us how it is.
Tell us what you really like about us.
Tell us how you feel.
You know, send us in, donate some money.
Donate to money.
And send us in some requests, and maybe we'll play them.
That's not a number for requests.
Oh, darn.
That's the wrong number for requests, so you can't do that. I mean,
Is there a right number for requests?
There is a right
just
number.
Call your home phone?
No, they could call a number for requests, but then
really?
There'd be two different numbers going. It's always hard to request during pledge drives.
That's very cool.
If you do a request, if you're like, you have to play this song, then you could tell whoever picks up the phone, and then the person who picks up the phone could call here and be like, you've got a request, and it's a whole ordeal.
Okay, so for now, let's just worry about the money.
The money, yeah. 51869, you got to give us the money.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
I love that movie.
It's a great movie.
That's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
The number is 518-697-7400. You can also go online from your smartphone or smart device or your dumb device, as the case may be. My parents just, quote-unquote, upgraded their smartphones to flip phones. And
Willie's coming.
We're going to talk about him quick. Man, Willie, he's just... Wow, Willie. Willie.
Yeah, Willie. Really,
yeah.
We're live on the radio right now. We're
talking
on air
about
talking about you.
You got solo cups?
Yeah, I got cups.
You can't really put coffee in solo cups.
Why not?
You can
not?
Put
because
coffee in
plastic.
Anything you want.
Do you want me to go get more cups?
Kind of.
No, don't get more cups. No.
I'll get more cups.
Don't worry about it.
No, I'll get more cups. It's okay.
Okay.
We were just telling people about how you can go online from all sort of different devices to wgxc.org/donate.
Yep.
To donate.
Yep.
And I was also saying my parents just got flip phones, and they're actually able to very primitively browse the web on them.
Whoa.
I was like, Mom, what are you doing? You've been sitting there, like, going at it on your phone for, like, you know, 10 minutes. Like, I'm on Facebook.
What?
How are you on Facebook?
Who's on Facebook on a flip phone?
That thing looks like a technological fossil. It should be in the natural...
That thing could only run MySpace.
It only has the space to run MySpace.
Like, that looks like it should be in the Technological History Museum in New York.
Zion.
Jeez. I could see that being something of Futurama.
Like it probably wouldn't be, because that's just like, I mean, that's 1,000 years. That's
I mean,
time,
it's
I
probably already in a museum.
Send in your answers now. Do you think 1,000 years is long enough
can't
to make
send
a museum?
Where are you going to send in your answers? The number doesn't go to us, Sam. That you can't, no, that it doesn't work.
It's a joke. Don't actually send in your answers.
Instead of sending in your answers, send in your money.
Okay.
Wait, where did my...
How many times am I going to say send in and you're going to correct me to money?
A lot, Sam.
Okay.
Right. Here we go. Here's something. If you do want to physically send something, if you enjoy sending physical documents, you can mail a check to 5662 Route 23, Acre, New York, 12405.
Call the WGXC feedback line anytime, 518-291-9492. If you have something to say about something you heard on WGXC, give us a call. Write it audio letter to the editor. Call in at 518-291-9492. Leave a 3-minute message and we'll play it back on All Together Now. That's 518-291-9492. To leave an audio letter to the editor at 518-291-9492. WGXC at 518-291-9492.
An excerpt of the Monday, June 25th Hudson Police Committee hearing with Hudson Police Chief Ed Moore and Columbia County Sheriff David Bartlett answering questions from the public about a recent police raid in Hudson.
Do you want to give an introduction on why we have all these weapons?
Well, the last meeting we had at 401, people wanted to see a visual display of what shared services and what our department is involved with in our city. We know that we had, let's see, last year we had 4 people die in our city due to drug overdose. We know that HPD revived 9 other people, potential for 13 deaths. This year, we're just about at the halfway point through the year, we have had 1 death and we've had 6 revivals so far this year. We know that the deployment of shared services was in response to police investigations into drug dealing. That's what I think got the conversation started. It was last Wednesday. We had a meeting at 401, able to field some questions, and that's what we plan on doing tonight. The weapons you hear are portions, some taken by shared services, some are not being able to pull it here because of pending cases. All these weapons were taken by our department, some pursuant to investigations, some on traffic stops. Some have been destroyed already, but this is a portion of what we deal with. And I thought a visual display of the weaponry that's out there might drive home the fact that when we do a deployment, this is what the potential is on the other end of the other side of the door. And I don't think, I've heard a couple comments last week that they didn't think that it was effective or that we didn't really seize anything. This is what your 26-man department is dealing with in a 2.2 square mile area. Every one of those boxes represents some kind of long weapon. Every one of the small boxes represents a pistol of some sort. None of them are registered. So point being is when we do deploy, and I've been at every deployment within the city of Hudson, we're there for a reason that we've made an assessment of the risk on the other side of the door, and that's why we deploy our team. The purpose is for safety. I don't want to tempt fate. But in the deployments in the city of Hudson, we've been safe. Safe for the officers, safe for bystanders, neighbors, and safe for the defendant. And I said at the beginning of the last meeting that I promised that I never made a promise that there would be no deployments within the city of Hudson, but if there were, that I would weigh all the factors before deploying. And I take responsibility for the times that we have deployed. Because there was some kind of threat assessment, again, on the other side of the door. And not a light threat assessment, generally a police officer, intelligence, undercover operations, person's past history of violence that leads us to use the shared services team to give a measure of safety. So this is a portion of what we've taken from our city.
I want to open it up to the public. If you can just state your name and where you live in the city. And I just ask everyone to maintain a level of respect. Thank you.
Okay, William Hughes. I live in 307 State Street in the city of Hudson. And I attended the Board of Supervisors meeting last week, and I also read the articles. And at that time, I said it was unfortunate. The article that ran in the paper, because I think it mischaracterized the whole situation from my standpoint of view, from where I came from. And I continue to stand by that for the simple reason is, it seems like a lot of issues are being conflated, right? We're taking police issues where we feel as people within the minority community are being targeted by police unfairly. And I would agree with some of that assessment. I haven't really seen it here in Hudson, but when we start talking about stop and frisk and those kinds of things, I am a strong opponent of that kind of police action. But when we're talking about the kind of action that took place as far as this raid in the city of Hudson, if we were to keep that issue focused on, are we against raids? Because I've been reading a lot of posts where people are saying they're like advocating against raids altogether. Are we against raids? Are we against the way the raid was conducted? Because what I can say is that someone who works closely with the opiate issue in the city, and I'm still working through my service on the community service board, the police, the chief put out some numbers, which I believe chief might be a little higher actually than the numbers he stated. But in within Columbia County, we were averaging a death a month. And I don't know if people in the room actually understand that. We're not talking about overdoses. We were averaging one death a month. There was one instance last year when we had 11 deaths between the two counties. People have to put that in perspective. 11 deaths. This isn't overdoses. I actually had someone overdose between my house and Supervisor Musman's house. And I wasn't there to deploy my Narcan kit, but fortunately, a police officer got there in time and was able to bring this person back. So with us understanding and having the knowledge of knowing that this is indeed the case, that this opiate situation has become to the level of where it's beyond now what we're trying to say, you know, it's taking over this county. You know, it is definitely at an epidemic state. We have to do something to remove these drugs. And for the people out there saying it started with the pharmaceuticals, I'm all on board with that. I helped lead the county to sue the pharmaceutical. But where the void is, the drug dealers are picking up. And we know, I mean, we have proven data. We know that the drug dealers are purposely making some of these packages of drugs hot so that they will purposely overdose some of the people that are using them. And I am saying that if we have drug dealers that are out in the street, and I don't care who it is, if we have drug dealers that are out in the street pushing this kind of thing, I don't want them in my neighborhood. I don't care what color skin they are. I don't care where they live. I want them out of my neighborhood. If we can move them downstate or wherever they want to go, we want to send a message that we do not want that in Hudson. And I think that's the kind of message that the police chief and the sheriff was trying to send. Now, if we in the audience have an argument about the way they conducted that, I think we can have a civil discussion around, you know, the kind of tactics they use. I'm not in law enforcement, so I'm not an expert on that. But with the data that came forth, I have. And I know it's pretty critical, and we should be very concerned about that data. Thank you.
Claudia Burris, 308 State Street. The war on drugs has been going on for a very long time. And there seem to be, in these raids, more and more guns and ammunition being seized. So it's not getting, there are no less guns. There are more and more and more. And that's a whole other issue. Why are there guns? These are unregistered guns. Are these the guns from your raid this on State Street? These are the ones that came from State Street? Am I understanding this correctly?
No, this would be a lot for one raid.
That's what I'm asking. No. So, what came from that the raid on State Street?
I broke it down.
That's, yeah, good.
First of all, does anyone know how many deployments we've had in the city of Hudson since shared services started?
It hasn't been many, I don't think.
Does anyone have a guess?
3 to 3.
We're averaging about 3 a year. So, of the, since the inception of the shared services, we've had 9 deployments. In the 9 deployments, 5 times weapons were recovered, and 9 weapons total have been seized during deployments.
So 9 raids, 9?
Nine raids over 3 years, 5 weapons. Now, mind you, they're all backed up with warrants, and it's always recently picked a venue for a location for a raid because we've documented drug activity there or some kind of criminal activity. So we always have a defendant stems from one of these actions. So the weapons that have been seized this year are not here because they're still active, the prosecutions.
I still would like to say, and I do, Tiffany did say, we do depend, everybody here depends on the police. When someone stands up and says something about the police, there's a lot of people who say, oh, well, they don't support the police. That is not true. My concern is that the trust between the community and the police is harmed by the SWAT raids because they are overwhelming in a neighborhood. People are harmed who really shouldn't be harmed in these raids. I mean, I think there were people in this raid who were there were young children involved.
May I ask respectfully? Respectfully, were you down there?
No, I was not.
Okay,
down
so
there.
I was.
And I did I, see I, the so, video.
So what happened? Well, let me tell you how it works. I promised when we formed this. Got to remember, back in August of 2014, I suspended SWAT. I'm not sitting here as an advocate for SWAT or love SWAT. I don't love it. I wish we didn't have to have SWAT in our town. I'm with you on that. Okay, we suspended the SWAT team in August of 14. The reason being is we had to bring the training up to a professional level for everybody's safety. So we, with the sheriff and with the additional help from the sheriffs, two sheriffs, we've got to the point where we can train a lot and do this with a professional level. Every deployment, and what I said at that time, was that we would only deploy shared services when I thought that there was a safety risk, that we wouldn't willy-nilly, you know, go down the street and parade large weapons and all this other stuff to intimidate our people. I understand that. The 9 actions that you've seen over 3 years is because we assessed what was going on at that location and figured there might be a possibility of violence. It's at that point that we deploy the team. Now, the team goes in there, yes, and it is scary. We understand that. I'm at every one of them. And, for example, the last one, I talked to a lot of citizens on that block to assure them that they're okay, that it was safe. And then we try to get the intimidation factor out of there. And in that case, the trucks and everything was going on in 20 minutes, leaving the police behind to execute the remaining search warrants. So I understand how folks are going to be upset and when they see these kind of vehicles and such, but I wanted to get through these conversations. The reason that they're deployed is for the protection of everybody, even though it's hard to understand if you don't know the whole everything that's going on at that location.
I would think that knocking on a door for any kind of event that you think might be dangerous is terrifying. So then you have, this is even more terrifying. So you have, terrifying and more terrifying and more terrifying.
Conventional investigations that you would support. A lot of these weapons come from that. But in the instances where we know we have intelligence and information that there's potential for violence,
that's the opportunity to use the shared services team. And that, to me, is the responsible action, because in a lot of these cases, we could be stopping a car or arresting a person and finding a weapon on them. We don't have the convenience of planning. But when I'm able to plan, I want to use every precaution possible.
So when you plan with...
This is Bill McKibben from 350.org, and you're listening to WGXE, that's 90.7 on your FM dial, ACRA, putting the community back in radio.
WGXE believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXE is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in ACRA, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
Here's more of the public talking at the Hudson Police Committee meeting June 25th in Hudson, with Hudson Police Chief Ed Moore and Columbia County Sheriff David Bartlett answering questions from the public. You can hear the full recording online in the WGXC audio archives.
The team, which is you and the sheriff, and how does the city know that's going to happen? I mean, is the mayor involved?
Sometimes I speak to the mayor just prior to an incident to know that there's going to be an incident in town in case there's any public, you know, concern. Obviously, we have to be guarded for everybody's protection and announcing when we're going to do something. You just can't operate that way. If we have a search warrant, I can't go out and say, hey, everyone on this block, get ready because we're coming, because that'll defeat the purpose.
I would think that the mayor would be involved, like, with the say-so of, you know, like, here I am, I'm the mayor of the city, I'm the civilian mayor, and that he could say, I don't think this is a good idea, or I think this is a good idea, or is it totally up to you? In which case,
Yes, hi, I'm Rick Rector, I'm the mayor of the city of Hudson, and I want everyone to know that I have complete faith in our police chief and our police department. And the fact that we have not put a commissioner over the police department for the past, is it a year now? Approximately a year, maybe a year and a half. I think, first of all, I congratulate on the direction the chief has taken the police department. It's a difficult scenario, and we're talking about a lot of issues here. So, no, the chief advised me when he's doing something like this, an hour maybe in advance or 2 hours. He's the expert. I am not the expert. I am the mayor of the city of Hudson. I'm sworn in to protect everybody, and I have complete faith in him and his department. So we're talking about a lot of issues here that we discussed the other night at 401 State, a lot of social issues,
And I think they're all great conversations, and we should be having this discussion about a lot. I think William said it, very nicely. If I ever thought someone was targeting a certain group, I would be jumping up and down. And that's not the case here. We're involved in an epidemic of huge proportions, where people are dying, it's ruining lives. I have a nephew that died several years ago. I have another nephew in the same family that's been in and out of jail and in and out of treatment year after year after year. This is a frightening, scary situation. So when we ask our police and we ask our law enforcement to protect us, I have to trust in them. And they don't know what's on the other side of that door. And this, I think, I didn't know this was going to happen, but it's an interesting example. This is on the other side of the door. And I want to make sure that our people that are sworn to protect us have as much protection as they possibly can too. I think the chief said it better than anyone last week at the county meeting when he said, listen, I'm open to the tactics, but I'm not open to discussing the motive. We know the motive, and it's getting rid of drugs on the streets of Hudson.
Hi, I'm Dylan Weidman. I live on Lower Union, and I have a couple comments. Try to get through real quick. One, I just really want to thank the police for the good work they do. That I want to be clear on in this whole discussion. We don't have a bad force in this town. I've seen bad places. This is great. My main request, I'll start with a positive thing, which is that I think, like Rick said, we have an epidemic, and there's a lot of different ways outside of traditional policing to deal with that. And so first, I'd like to try to offer my help and also ask for support and cooperation from anyone who's interested in this in looking at harm reduction models. There's been a lot done around that, in both in New York City and all over the country. There's great trainings on it that help deal with the addiction side, And so, if anything, that's what I would like to come out of this meeting with is, hey, let's do that. Anyone who's interested, I love the cooperation and support of the chief and the council on that. And any recommendations, I'm not experienced in that. I'm just looking into it myself. The other two things. Less the joint services, but more just that truck. You're right. I don't know about the police tactics, but that truck driving down the street—that's the image we all saw. That in particular is concerning. One, if it's not necessary, that's concerning. Sure. If it is necessary, that's more concerning, and that's why I want to look at alternatives. It's crazy that we've gotten to this point, because Hudson has always had a lot of drug problems. And in fact, when you came here, there was open dealing on the streets that got shut down, and there's been some of a clampdown since then, what I could say. And that leads me to kind of my third, I might come back to the truck, but this isn't an easy issue, but one of my concerns is that when you take out an established drug dealers in the city, people who know their business, have been going about it, right? I'm concerned that often when those guys are removed, the replacement is a teenager. It's a younger, dumber, more volatile kid who sees the money, sees the opportunity, and gets into it. And I don't know if that's what led to the violence last summer. I don't know much about that. But my concern is that is a thing that happens. We run in and we say, let's get rid of all the drugs. Let's get rid of all the drug dealers. People still are going to buy drugs. An addict isn't going to be like, oh, I'll go somewhere else. An addict wants to find drugs. And there's a market there. So you're going to end up with younger, more volatile people moving into those. Because if there's a higher turnover, more risk, more money, hey, that's a younger guy. And so I see that as a real problem that actually escalates things and ends up with the truck, So I'm just, to me, the message sent by that, I know your message was like, hey, let's, you know, let's send them, get out of town, you know, send them a message. But to me, the message is like, this is crazy. Like that the police are either desperate or out of touch. That's what it looks like. I've heard you. Or, you know what I mean? Like, why do we have an armored vehicle driving down the street? And I hear it, like, for safety. And I have to trust you guys on that. But so anyways, I want to move towards possibly newer, more sophisticated, maybe more enlightened ways of dealing with the drug problem, and I'd like to do that together so that the police can coordinate. It's complicated, but I don't know how many steps ahead you're thinking when you say, hey, let's run them out of town, because I don't necessarily see that happening.
Okay, man, I don't operate on a principle that I'm winning the war on, or even waging the war on drugs. I operate on a very basic principle, that the availability of drugs in this town, okay, has to be less than the availability of help. Now, we in HPD are doing our part to try to eradicate the availability from very bad drug dealers, very people that are set out to harm other people and make money. I look at it as we're doing our part. We have open felonies. Drug dealing happens. So an addict comes into town, they can readily get drugs. Our part is to eradicate that, but there's another half. There's true. The addict has to find help. It's easily accessible as the folks standing on the street corner selling drugs. Okay? That's where we're open to conversation. Churches, social services, individuals, concerned individuals. We have to work together. But on the other hand, as a police department, when we are watching hours of surveillance of open drug dealing, I feel compelled to do something about that. And then you throw in the fact that there is a proliferation of guns. You know, I talked to a retired sergeant who worked in the 70s, retired in the 80s, 20-some years, didn't have any gun violence. Okay, they had, some of us know that, back in the 70s. There was fights and there was knifings and things like that, but there was no gun violence. This is really why I brought this. This is what's going on in 2.2 square miles. This is what causes the armored vehicle. Now, is it form over substance? Is that what you're saying? Is the image of it more compelling than the actual safety it provides? I don't know, but I don't have the luxury of that discussion because I'm responsible for 26 individuals. I'm sending them into that building. And like I said in 401, if I didn't take the precaution and they were harmed, I couldn't live with myself, or a citizen, or even a defendant, you know? So when these things happen, I'm sick until it's over, you know? I'm worried about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I go to every deployment. So I think, you know, I respect your opinion, and I think you're onto something. But it's almost one-dimensional with the police in that when I see a felony, I have to act on it. The alternative is not to. And then what would fill that void?
Yeah, I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't in a particular case, but a more sophisticated view is understanding that, you know, like for instance, when there was open drug dealing in this town, a lot of that was somewhat sanctioned, and you know, like I remember police watching the deals go down and not stopping it. There was some sort of arrangement going on, and I just think that, you know, sometimes a more sophisticated approach that's thought through, so that you say, yeah, there's this guy, but you know, he's not harming anybody. I mean, other than, you know, we can test the drug. I don't know the answer. I know it's a complicated thing. What I'd like to do is start to look at all the different ways that we can deal with drug addiction in this town and make sure that we don't spiral out of control with escalation, because like I said, you get rid of one bad dude, what's to stop a younger, dumber bad dude from taking his place and making it that way? I mean, I feel sad for the kids who end up in that situation,
yeah,
you know?
They want to move on because there's a big
okay.
Out of jazz.
My name is Tiffany Garriga, Second Ward Alderman. I have a question for the chief. It was said earlier that shared services was used 3 times, and out of those 3 times, were there any?
Go and get some records. Go and get some records. some records for my baby.
Mr. Record Man, get this record for me, won't you please?
I should keep records of these things.
The WGXC Record Fair 2018 is coming back Sunday, September 16th at the Basilica Hudson. Vendors from across the Northeast will gather at Basilica's main hall to sell vinyl, CDs, cassette tapes, DVDs, books, musical equipment and instruments, and radio-related ephemera. If you want to get involved and sell records, CDs...
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. At the June 14th Chatham Village Board meeting, Village Accountant Robert Patterson advised that a private audit of the village finances could cost as much as $30,000. Patterson also said if state auditors reviewed the books, they would just review internal systems and, he said, those, and I quote, are fine, end quote. Patterson also explained during the public meeting that the board can lend money from the general fund to the water and sewer department to cover the existing deficit, but the funds would have to be repaid. The village is currently running a deficit of approximately $370,000 for water and sewer services. Village Treasurer Barbara Henry said using funds from the general fund would suffice for the short term as long as the village is taking some action to increase revenue for water and sewer services. She said the state wants to see, and I quote, the village is doing something to reduce the deficit, end quote. In May, the village increased water and sewer rates by 65%, effective June 1st. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Dan Freeman is reporting for the Times Union on the SNAP work requirement contained in the federal bill that U.S. Representative John Faso voted for last week. The measure passed the House June 21st on a narrow 213-211 vote. As approved, the measure would expand the already existing work requirements for able-bodied recipients under the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. Anyone between the ages of 18 and 59 would be mandated to work or to participate in job training for at least 20 hours a week. The new bill raises the previous age limit by 10 years from 49 to 59. A Congressional Budget Office analysis of the bill found it would result in trimming $9 billion nationwide from the program over a decade. Other estimates say it would result in 1 million people losing the benefit. The House version of the bill, Friedman writes, and I quote, is likely to get roughed up in the Senate, end quote, where Democrat votes would be required to win approval. Agriculture Committee member Kirsten Gillibrand said she would fight to keep the House SNAP measure out of the Senate bill. She said, and I quote, I am disturbed that House Republicans, including some from our own state, want to make it even harder for struggling families to put food on the table. And I think this plan is a blatant example of how out of touch Congress is about poverty in our country, end quote. In response to the criticism, Faso said, and I quote, this doesn't reduce eligibility for SNAP. It simply says you should be in training or at work to receive benefits, if able-bodied. This is not grapes of wrath, end quote. With 2.8 million recipients, New York has the fourth largest SNAP population in the nation. About 60% of New York SNAP recipients live in New York City. In Faso's 19th congressional district, 10% of the population receives SNAP compared to 15% statewide. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting a bill that would allow the use of medical marijuana in the state of New York to be expanded is now awaiting Governor Andrew Cuomo's signature. The measure was approved by the state legislature before the end of the legislative session last week. At present,
Medical marijuana may be prescribed to treat chronic pain, but the legislation would allow its use for episodic pain. The bill was sponsored by Republican State Senator George Amador. Amador said, and I quote, "Someone who may have been going through maybe a torn rotator cuff or a certain type of medical condition, now a doctor could be allowed the use of medical marijuana to treat that type of pain as an alternative to an opiate that they would typically go and prescribe," end quote. The measure would also allow medical marijuana to be used as an alternative to Suboxone to wean an addicted person from an opiate. And you can read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Glenn Blaine is reporting for the Daily News. Republican gubernatorial candidate Marcus Molinaro, June 22nd, called for an end to state-funded corporate welfare. Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive, promised to overhaul New York's, and I quote, "failed and bloated economic development programs," end quote, and stop the flow of discretionary tax dollars to individual corporations. Molinaro said at a press conference held at the state capitol, and I quote, "we will not authorize cutting checks to businesses," end quote. The Tivoli Republican said he would still support tax breaks for businesses so long as they were part of a broad-based effort. He said, and I quote, "the way, in my opinion, that you grow jobs in the state of New York is you reduce cost and you make it easier for businesses to thrive," end quote. Following Molinaro's comments, Cuomo campaign officials labeled him a hypocrite. They said he applauded Cuomo's economic development efforts in 2012 when the state helped retailer Gap Incorporated expand its Dutchess County distribution center with $1 million worth of tax credit. And you can read the full story in the New York Daily News. And that wraps up the WDXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For weather reports, town meetings, and more information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 73 and a low around 54. Wednesday, there's a 30% chance of showers, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 70, a low around 62. Thursday, there's a 80% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm with a high near 75 and a low around 63. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Tuesday, June 26th, Pete Levensee starts the day in Catskill with the WGXC morning show from 9 to 11 a.m., followed by The Forgotten Geek with Corey McCasland from 11 until noon. Later on at 2 o'clock on Backtracks in Time, for a special Radio Everywhere Pledge Drive edition, Jack Sensabaugh talks with Town of Catskill historian Eugene Edwards about the tanning industry in Greene County in the early 1800s. Later on in the evening at 7 o'clock, Mostly Singles, hosted by Michael Wilde, followed by Battlefield Earth with Dan Seward from 9:30 to midnight.
Tune in the early morning hours of Wednesday, June 27th, to Transmission Arts on the air, with the Vital Weekly show at 1 a.m., and the Watt from Pedro show from Mike Watt, 2 a.m., radio news at 5 a.m., overnight on Wavefarm Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, heard weekday mornings here at 8 o'clock on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC is hosting its pledge drive, and we need your support. Help keep Hands-On Creative Community Radio alive in your region by calling 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online with your tax-deductible pledge at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org/donate. Help WGXC meet its goal and keep local, national, and international news broadcasting in Greene and Columbia counties. Thanks so much.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Here are the Hudson Dusters, Catskill musicians John Byron Wooden and Foggy Otis, with Straight Away from their soon-to-be-released album, Dare to Dream.
¶¶ Got no extra time to wait and ask you for his name. Got a pocket full of diamonds worth a few short stops. He plans along the way, saying, I am bound.
I am bound.
Oh, yes, I'm bound. Straight away. For his sweetheart, she's a fair and fancy freedom loving woman that may can't bear the thought of thinking that her impression of him says he's gone astray. So I am bound.
I am bound.
Oh yes, I'm bound. Straight away. Of his rights, not a chain could hold him down, much less could it drag him with this train. Know this stranger, he won't be tied, lest the bind his arms belong to sweet Adelaide. I am bound,
I am bound.
Oh yes, I'm bound.
Nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur, or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, heard weekday mornings here at 8 o'clock on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC is hosting its pledge drive, and we need your support. Help keep hands-on creative community radio alive in your region by calling 518- 697-7400. That's 518 877-6947-7400, or you can pledge online with your tax-deductible pledge at wgxc.org/donate. That's WGXC.